Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephAuto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's big, strong, play guitar in here. Looks like we got a good crowd in here. Turn it up, pretend and get loud.
Up in the air. AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green and the clock hits zero.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. I am your Bengals beat writer, Paul Daner Jr. And in the past, over these last few months, you know, I've been doing my tour of Cincinnati as we go around and talk to different people. We did one with Mo Egger, went out to Doc's Loveland Estate. We did the draft spectacular a couple of weeks ago, hearing from people all over. Well, we're going to get a bit more normalized now because something I've mentioned before, and I hopefully you've noticed at this point, is officially have our second, my tag team partner is with me now. I have our second writer, Jim Ozarski, is officially here. Jim, welcome.
Thank you very much, Paul.
It's great to see you.
It's great to be here.
My mileage count is going to be so down now. I won't have to go driving. Now you know, before we let you get into too much going here, we're a musical people here. We're a musical podcast. We like to keep it in any good entry, any arrival into our podcast world pretty much requires a walk-up song. So we're just going to go ahead and give you your walk-up song right here. I think Lupe Fiasco is smooth. He is smooth.
He is. And, you know, I don't know if a guy who's been doing it as long as he has can be underrated, underground, or whatever. But he's not, you know, he hasn't really popped mainstream-wise. I don't really know if he wants to, but that particular song, you know, Snoop Dogg is there when I know he's coming to Cincinnati this summer.
Yeah.
So, you know, a little bit of a preview there, but no, it's he's good. I'm from Chicago originally, so I'll always love guys coming out of Windy City.
Yeah, no doubt. Kick Push was one of my favorites. I always thought that was a sweet song. I don't know if I would ever run, which I don't run very often. But when I would run, it always made me feel like I'm doing a good thing. This is a good day, you know. Whenever you hear him come on,
sweet. Yeah, he was. You know that first record, Kick Push was, you know, a skateboard anthem in hip hop circles. It was, you know, especially back then, it was a little ahead of the curve. Now it's a thing.
Yeah,
you know, the backpackers and the skateboard culture, some of that stuff. But you know, when he started, you know, it was a little different.
Yeah. So you are here now. You have come here from onmilwaukee.com, and you like you said, you grew up in Chicago. You worked in Chicago and Naperville for a little while with one of our mutual friends, Patrick Mooney, who covers the Cubs now for Comcast. And that's kind of how we came about to kind of track you down a little bit. But just real quick, so people know who you are, and I do want to run down before we go delving into Jimmo's life story for the next 20 minutes. We're going to talk a ton of draft here. We're going to get into all of your, you know, the Bengals draft needs, We're going to bring you some Duke Tobin audio, him talking about trades and value and what the Bengals can do this year because they have a unique circumstance with some of their picks. I'm going to bring you some Darqueze Dennard to kind of revisit last year briefly, who is not sounding like the humble team guy that he was last year. He called it blood in the water right now because he's ready to play, which I thought was great, great comments from him last week. And some George Iloka talking about current players and how much they watch the draft to see if guys are getting drafted this position. So we're going to get to all of that, but I do want to introduce everybody to Jim so we have him here now. So kind of ran down your resume a little bit, but take us through it. Take us on the wild magic carpet ride a little bit.
Yeah, and it's came up from iMilwaukee.com. I was there for 3 years covering Green Bay Packers, of course, and then a little bit of everything else. Milwaukee Brewers for the Big East fans, Marquette University, a little bit of the University of Wisconsin. For your hockey fans here, the Milwaukee Admirals, which pulls teams up from the squad here in Cincinnati.
We have a huge Cyclones, yeah. Cincinnati Cyclones listening base here. We don't, but they're very. It's a very nice product.
Right.
It's
so,
a very nice product.
A little bit of everything in Milwaukee, and yes, prior to that was with the Chicago Sun-Times Media Company, based out in their suburban chains in Naperville, Aurora, second, third biggest cities in the state, believe it or not. And so, yeah, a little bit of everything, but definitely happy to be here, looking forward to diving into the Bengals. Although I will be your tag team partner, however, I'll never come off the top rope. Three knee surgeries and two ACL reconstructions. I'm going to slide in, you know, right under that bottom rope, you know, running in from the tunnel.
Like one of the managers, like Jimmy Hart or something,
right,
back in the day with the megaphone. Never went over the top like Jimmy Superfly Snuka, no, or anything like that. You had knee surgery. What'd you do? Were you going to be a professional athlete or something?
I was an athlete back in the day. I played basketball and high jumped, and that led to the first of two high school knee surgeries, and then the third one, the most recent one, just kind of came out, I think, just from years of overuse, bad rehab, because I'm not a professional athlete.
Right.
But I am a golfer, so it was on that left knee. If there's any golfers out there, you know that's a little bit of torque on that front leg. I'm right-handed, so had to get that fixed up.
So you're a big-time golfer now. There's some good courses around here that you're going to have to – we're going to have to do a little tour. We're going to get you around and check out some of these courses and see what you think.
I have heard that that Northern Kentucky, Cincinnati area has some – pretty beautiful.
What's your handicap? Are you going to be embarrassing me out there?
Well, pre-knee injury, I was an 11.
Okay.
Since then, it's been a rough go coming back. You know, so you see flashes of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's still probably going to embarrass me. Even more embarrassing, a dude with three knee surgeries, it would come out there and start wiping the floor with me. That wouldn't be great. So you were on Milwaukee, and you covered some Packers up there, which was kind of cool. We ended up having AJ Hawk on our first Beyond the Stripes last week. If you haven't seen that, there's some of that video is up on the website, Cincinnati.com. It was a great show, a good time down there. You even took it to him in the trivia contest.
I did. I was a little surprised because the funny thing is AJ was in Wisconsin far longer than I was. So I was happy to be able to get some of those Wisconsin Milwaukee trivia questions, you know, beat AJ Hawk a little bit, but that was the only time that'll happen.
Yeah, I even fed him. I fed the easies. I opened with who was the MVP of Super Bowl 45, just to try to get him on a good roll. The Super Bowl he was in, they won.
Right.
Get to Aaron Rodgers. After that, he fell off.
Yeah,
it was the pressure. You know, he could maybe play 9 seasons in the NFL, win Super Bowls, but he can't handle the pressure when the lights come on and be on the stripes. You know,
that's exactly what it was, I think.
There's no doubt. So, yeah, like, again, if you haven't seen it, it was a great show. Really super interesting guy. AJ Hawk was he wants to actually get into broadcasting, so he was very complimentary of me while we were talking, which I appreciated. No one ever says anything nice about me on the show, and so it was nice for him to. I felt loved, you know. I felt a little loved, but he has his own podcast, which is cool, the Hawk Cast.
Yeah,
and it's not just sports guys. Although he did have Maurice Claret, his old teammate from Ohio State, Maurice Claret, on recently, but he had Sal Volcano from Impractical Jokers, who I'm a huge fan of their show, and all walks of life, directors, writers, authors. I mean, he's had a little bit of everybody. So we're gonna try to have him on a podcast later this year, and his parents actually came down to the Beyond the Stripes show. We were talking to them about maybe trying to throw something together with him and his brothers and do something, which would be cool because his older brother Ryan played quarterback at Ohio U, my strong alma mater, and they actually did a podcast together when AJ got released, and basically Ryan turned the tables and was interviewing AJ, and they've got a lot of dirt on each other, so it would be a cool episode to do. So we're gonna hope to try to do something like that once we get into season next year. Lots of plans, plenty of time to plan for next year though. Let's focus on this week, biggest week obviously of the offseason for all 32 NFL teams. Probably, maybe except for the Dolphins, who spent the gross domestic product of Trinidad and Tobago on Ndamukong Suh. The 9 picks for the Bengals. They have a first, a second, 2/3, 2/4. They're one of 3 teams, I believe, with 6 picks in the first 4 rounds. It is... an opportunity is here for this team right now. Let's just here's where I want to start, and I think we'll get some good insight into where to look at this Bengals draft. Is let's kind of go through and rank their draft needs and in our minds, and kind of talk about where you think they will find those guys and what's the best method of filling it. So let's start with the number one. I don't know if it's consensus as much. But to me, it's the number one thing they have to come away from this draft with is some sort of future fix at the tackle position. I've been saying it all along. I don't think it's changed, especially after free agency and they didn't really fill anything. I think that continues to stay what they need most. I think it's the most likely first-round pick, but you could probably – they have the luxury of getting a developmental-type guy, maybe a guy that teams will pass over because he needs a year to heal from an injury, or maybe he's just raw. They have that luxury. They could maybe find a guy later, but you know how it is in this league. There are certain positions that need to be drafted in the first round that you need to fill, and the blind side of your quarterback is one of them.
Right. Yeah. They need a tackle. And maybe they don't need one this year. Obviously, as we all know, it's football, so injuries can happen at any point. And then that guy who maybe you thought would be a developmental pick becomes necessary.
Right.
But, you know, aside from that, so let's think health and think that the guys who are there, the veterans on the roster, will be healthy, and that will allow the Bengals to maybe pick a tackle. Off the air, Paul, we were talking about a little bit the idea of a playmaker, and when you talk about needs – it's a general term, playmaker, but I think it's a good one because it's like, well, what is that? So is it a left tackle who can be a future All-Pro? It's not sexy.
No.
You know, but that's a playmaker mainly because it allows your quarterback to make plays down the field, right?
Absolutely.
But you know, what I'm curious to see is you know, at 21, the Bengals are such a weird spot. You know, they've got to look at, you know, they got to be ready to pick any one of what, a dozen guys at that point?
Yeah,
Philip Rivers still may be traded. Chip Kelly may add yet another quarterback and make a move up into, you know, to draft Marcus Mariota.
There's been a ton of trades in recent years.
Right, who knows how a team feels about Todd Gurley. So all of a sudden, there may be some things happening where that defensive line playmaker slips a little bit.
That's an interesting thought there. That's kind of surfaced a little more lately as we've heard some of the bigger names amongst the defensive line prospects suddenly not be as sexy or just talked about because we're hearing much more about guys that you mentioned, Gurley. Some of the corners have really risen up. If there's two things, if you're watching for those first, 3 hours plus to the Bengals pick, if you're watching for that point in the graph, what you're watching for is runs on positions the Bengals likely aren't looking for as much in those first rounds. You know, you're going to see both quarterbacks taken. You would love to see a run on – you want to see at least two of those running backs get up ahead of you. You want to see both of those guys,
which would be interesting because it'd be interesting because running back that Trent Richardson was the last first rounder.
That
worked out really well.
Yeah,
I mean Le'Veon Bell in this division second round pick. I mean it's
the Bengals have made a habit off of the second round picks. You know, with Hill and Bernard and Bell, and we've seen it work across the board. But I still don't know that I would take any running back in the first round. Now, there is a lot of value in having a great running back on these rookie contracts in the first four rounds, and it actually gets a little better value when you get them in the first, because you get that fifth year on the back end of these new contracts that you could do the transition year essentially. After that, their prime's over. For a running back, at that point they're 27 and it's all downhill. So it makes sense to have it, but you just see, to me, the second, third round, you've just seen too many good running backs come out of there, and it'd be too much. It's so much more important just to have the line in front of them that I think teams would be making mistakes taking a running back in front of the Bengals. If you're at 20, if you're the Cowboys at 27, and or Seattle, and you know Marshawn Lynch is getting towards the end, and you take Todd Gurley or you take Gordon, I get it. But I mean, if you're the Bengals, you're sitting there, hell yes, keep taking those running backs in front of us. We don't need those. Keep taking those cornerbacks. It's doubtful that they would take a corner. I don't see them doing that, even though you know they love their corners. Everybody knows they only draft first-round corners in even years, apparently. So I could see that maybe next year when you would have – we'll see who returns, but you know you'll have probably Dre and Darquez at your corners there. But so those types of positions that have runs will push back a guy like Phillips from Oklahoma, a guy like Danny Shelton from Washington, suddenly, or really any of these types of – maybe positions that you said, huh. Or even a Devontae Parker from Louisville, who most people have projected in the top 10 to 15, and probably will still go there. But if you have certain runs of these positions, you never know what falls into your lap that you never quite saw coming.
Right. Especially the thing that's fascinating about this discussion, especially when you're talking about a team like the Bengals, which is it's a perennial playoff team now, 4 years in a row. You call it that. So,
absolutely.
You know, so they're a good team. And when you're down at 21, you're sort of, you know, at the mercy of everyone else. And not only the runs that you mentioned there, Paul, but again, if there's a trade early, well, then how does that affect those middle round guys? Well, all of a sudden, you know, one team makes a surprise move no one expected. Well, now, you know, you talked about some of the audio about the Bengals, and their trade history here a little bit, and what they may be looking to do. Well, all of a sudden, what happens between 10 and 15, 15 and 20? Well, hey, maybe there was a crazy trade. Those guys want to move down. Someone kind of panics. They want to move up. 21's at the end of the first round is really an interesting spot to be in, especially when, yes, they have needs, they have desires, but they're not. There's not a guy they want. There's not someone they're really targeting. This is the guy. So they're kind of, you know, I don't want to say spectators, but in a way, it's almost as interested of a watch party as we are.
Yeah. At the last, and it's interesting for Bengals fans, because over the last 3 years, this interesting spot has been where they've lived, because they've been right in this early 20s area for a number of years in a row, and it's been fairly hard to predict. It's exactly what we're talking about is what happened last year with Darquez Dennard, who they had as the eighth best player on their board, sitting there at 24. And it just makes you say, holy crap, sometimes you just don't know. Next thing you know, this guy who hits you nicely and is one, in your eyes, was the best cornerback in the draft where two of them went ahead, suddenly was sitting there and just falls into your lap. This is the area where you get those guys that you just never expect to fall, to drop to those early 20s, guys that were at one point top 10 projects. One thing that I think it could be very interesting, if they don't feel like the guy that they have as their number one tackle, and we'll go through some of those options, is there, or if they didn't see the guys they wanted to fall to them. I think because of the large, I don't know what you would call it, glob of sort of like prospects in this area. Because,
right.
You know, one thing that we've heard a lot about when people have analyzed this draft is that there's about 10 to 15 high-end players. And then from that point forward until about the third round, it's a whole lot of what fits you well.
Right.
And the Bengals have proven in the past, in 2012, something I wrote about this weekend, that they have been willing to move back if they felt it was doable, where they weren't afraid of getting certain players. So that's something to think and keep that in your head. I want to bring in Duke Tobin, an interview I had with the Bengals director of player personnel. Last week, we were kind of talking about the 2012 draft and how it connects to this 15 draft because of the setup. When you have extra picks in the middle rounds, they need an offensive lineman. Paul Alexander tends to have very unique, specific tastes that a lot of other teams don't value as much. It's worked out for him, but it means they a lot of times can get guys a little later that will still be there. They are coming off a good season, and one where there seems to be a lot of pressure to take the next step. Not that that isn't every year, but when you had another good season, the same way as 11, which was the rookie year for Dalton and Green, it was good, but they to get to the next level, they knew there were certain things that they needed to do. There are a lot of similarities in that draft. I mean, in that draft, they moved back from 21 to 27 and got Kevin Zeitler and added a third-round pick. Something like that happening is a very real option, but Duke kind of got into that, and while doing that, talked a lot about trade value in general and how maybe the Bengals would look at it. So I want to bring in some of that conversation I had with Duke Tobin.
That draft was weird because you had the two ones, 17 to 21, and you know I think you guys had probably a good feel you wanted to take a guard. Yeah. And there was, not to compare players, but DeCastro and Zeitler were both there. I know, obviously, Paul liked Zeitler. You guys do the, you count though your board to 21, right?
Right.
That year, did you have it go further because you thought you might drop back?
Well,
or did you change philosophy with that?
I don't know that we changed philosophy, but yeah, as the draft unfolded, it became apparent that we felt like we could go back and still get who we wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, and there were still enough guys. You always forecast the worst, and so if you go back and the guy you're thinking about disappears, who else is there?
Yeah.
And so there's got to be enough other guys there that you would be happy with to move back. You don't move back with one guy in mind.
Yeah.
Because even though you might feel strongly he's going to be there, there's a chance he's not. There's
right.
a chance somebody else takes him. And
yeah.
so how far you go back factors in, and then how many other players you'd be happy with
yeah.
still available. You know, you always worst-case scenario it. And
yeah.
so, okay, we go back. Worst-case scenario is we end up with X. Mm-hmm. Are we okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you're never going to end up with a worst-case scenario.
Yeah.
But you plan for it.
Yeah, at least you hope not. Yeah.
It's hard to slide back with one guy in
yeah.
mind because you could get disappointed easy, and then all of a sudden you're scratching and you're saying, oh, well, we shouldn't have done that.
Shouldn't have done that, yeah. In that case, was Zeitler pretty much the guy you had pegged at that point?
We really liked Zeitler.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and we felt like we could get him there, and we were comfortable probably with some other guys if we had to.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, in the ideal situation for us, he would have been there, and he was, and that was good.
You look back at that, I mean, you got Zeitler and Brandon Thompson out of,
you know, and the defensive linemen, you know, we weren't necessarily in it for those guys. They
yeah.
were the best available guys at the time, and
yeah.
so it was, hey, you know what, I know we just took a defensive tackle, but
this guy's the best.
He's the best player available,
yeah.
In our opinion, and, you know, we ought to go for it.
Is that a hard thing in a draft? Or was
early
it was
rounds,
was
early
that,
rounds,
was that,
so you want to take the best talent.
Yeah.
The later rounds, you can start to
you can start fill spaces.
Needs, but,
and that year was good because you knew you had extra picks that you would be able
right.
to fill all those spaces
right.
or something.
You're hopeful that guys are going to be left over, and they seem to always be in the later rounds.
Yeah.
Know, very seldom are you sitting there going, oh, gee, we don't have anybody we're really excited about. Let's take so-and-so.
Yeah.
You know,
it's,
oh, my God, he's still available. You know, maybe he'll get to us. Maybe he'll get to us. And
mm-hmm.
he does.
I always love talking to Duke. He is so calculated, logical, and has such an unbelievable grasp for how to draft well. And he's a perfect fit for this organization because he has very smart patience, if you know what I mean. He understands the value of patience, but he also knows when you need to know when to make your move. Last year in particular, the Bengals move up in the fourth round to get Russell Bodine. He starts every game at center. Because they knew he was the last guy there. He was the last guy that could fill their center position needs, so they had to move up. They don't do that often. Mike Brown, not a big fan of moving. Likes to just kind of stay in his spot and let the draft
right.
come to him. But they have shown the last few years, if it fits them right, they will make a move. And we talk about this roster being pretty deep, and I don't know where a lot of the guys that are currently on this team will go, especially if they add, even with the 9 picks, much less if they start adding more. But the lesson was learned with Devin Still, and Brandon Thompson, and with Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones. Both the guys that were taking first, you wouldn't view them as the most valuable of those two today, far and away from it. In fact, the guys they took at the same exact positions when they doubled up in those drafts were the back ends, were the ones that really paid off for them. Not that Mohamed Sanu hasn't played well, but I think people certainly would view Marvin Jones, if healthy, as he's been a far more productive player. That's something to keep an eye on, and that's exactly what we're talking about with this draft is just if you got to take a position twice that you didn't even know that you need one, you do it because that's the top of your draft, and you worry about filling certain open spots later in the draft where you can plug and play, and then maybe you find guys like Iloka or Marvin Jones or any of these players.
Right, exactly. Being around Ted Thompson in Green Bay the last 3 years.
Very similar philosophies
right.
to the Bengals, yeah.
Yeah, you want – now, obviously they're drafting a little bit later. Their quarterback situation a little bit different. Yeah. Allows for a little more –
quarterback situation's a little bit different than just about everyone when you have pretty much one of the best in the game.
Exactly. Allows for a little more – I don't want to call it experimentation – at the back ends, but that's what they do there. Now, of late, when there has been a need, you know, HaHa Clinton Dix as a safety, Eddie Lacy as a running back, there were obvious needs, so he addressed those. But for the most part, that's what those good teams do, and I look at the Packers. I mean, you look at their track record, and I'm sure Bengals fans will love their organization to take that step and get to that point where it's NFC championship games, it's 13, 14 wins and talking about Super Bowls every year as opposed to one and dones. And that's what they do. It's best player available. They'll draft 2 to 3 wide receivers. They'll draft another running back. Eddie Lacy, well, okay, if one of them is sitting there, the fact that they have Aaron Rodgers says it all.
Right.
Brett Favre was still in his, well, I know he was doing his retirement dance, but there's a guy who played another 5, 6, 7 years maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Should have won another MVP after that when he was in Minnesota, and yet here comes Aaron Rodgers and is the greatest example of best player available.
Yeah.
So to that point, Paul, where yeah, if you see some picks where you're like, well, so-and-so is already there, you know, or where does that fit? You know what? That's up to the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for Duke Tobin and the player personnel, it's about giving. And you know what Marvin Lewis will say? I'll take him. Give me the best guy.
Exactly. He says, I don't draft backups. He wants to take the risk of the guy with the high ceiling. Maybe he's a little raw, but he doesn't want guys that are going to come in and be role players. He wants guys that are going to come in and start games and can be stars if they fulfill their potential. There's a lot of safe picks out there, guys with high floors. He will pass on the high floor for the high ceiling every time because he believes that they've shown that they can develop those guys. And in many ways they have, and it has paid off for them. You know, these last 4 or 5 years, that philosophy is what has created the depth that they have on this roster right now. You could argue the biggest high-floor, low-ceiling guy that they have selected in the last 5 years, Andy Dalton. Literally none. They had one. He was retiring or claiming he was going to retire. They had polished right then, day one, could step in and start guy of that draft, not named Cam.
Right.
Which I think if A.J. Green would have been selected. Things where they knew that whatever they did, they had to set it up, so they would much rather just have these high-ceiling guys, and you only can do that by willing to just say, so we already are full. And so that's why we rank these draft needs, and it's a very loose wide receiver in the second, safety in the third, and tight end in the fourth, or however we rank them, however they rank them. A lot of those, well, they might come up with them on day three. And you have to basically – everything that happened over the last 2 months, you almost have to just shut it out.
Right.
You know, it has changed since the college season ended by the teams that draft really well. I'm Ty. Good for you. The tape doesn't lie, you know, and that's what these teams go off. Who has been my Bengals mocked at 21 for a while now. I up all the way into the top 10. I just don't know that I buy that. That was getting high. And maybe it's because the coaches are more involved now and they're seeing it. Maybe they see something differently. I think he'll be there. He's a mean, nasty player on the field. They want more of those types of guys,
right,
who just play mean and nasty. Maybe they hit you a couple times after the whistle. Russell Bodine was like that. In the tackle, he has the versatility to play right or left or stepping in the middle. He seems to really just – he's a square peg in a square hole for this.
It's actually probably more important. Is that he'll be your left tackle at some point. Now at 21, like a Jake Long or someone where you're, okay, there it is. But especially with some veterans, add depth at both ends. Flowers should be there, mm-hmm. right? In the private workouts and the pro days is maybe you get someone excited. You get some scouts excited, and then you play the media game, and where teams at 9-10 like this guy, and then all of a sudden, but you're right. I think 12 different experts, including Bengals at that spot, most of them are offensive tackles. Whether it's Andres Pete from Stanford,
yeah,
fall down at that point. So are all of these guys interchangeable as far as one of those guys being at that spot?
Yeah. And there's that someone will be there. To me, I think it's a matter of, and maybe they try to trade to add a pick. But for the most part, I you just never know who they had rated high, and they're shocked to see there. Next thing you know, you got a lot of guys on the defensive line maybe that already probably won too big. That's how it's supposed to be, though. That's how you. So we both agree, though, that the offensive line is where they need to. They do need to find that position at some point. Wide receiver is the other one, and I've spent a lot of time here out of the first and second and even third round. There's so much at 53, and outside of two, obviously will be gone. Parker almost certainly will be gone. After that, the quest next best guy. Some of the guys that we've talked about in that area, Philip Dorsett from Miami, who I think is a sneaky great player that this team really likes, to be honest with you. There's a really good chance he'll be there at 21. I don't see him taking him at 21.
Yeah, I think, well, see, I guess I'm not a – they do is watch college football and do these projections, but I don't see – outside of those top three, I don't think those are realistic options. I think you're really – if they're still there, great. You fell into something that you're really happy.
Very good receivers, right? And they're not all going to be gone by 53. I don't know how much difference there is in how much they like in between, which teams won't value the same, because there really is, because there's so many different guys, particularly, and they're not giving a crap of if you're tall and long like so many of these teams value, especially a guy like Aguilar with special teams potential, I think is he's a plant right between about 27 and about 40. Split all the way back, you'd be shocked.
Well, what's interesting to watch, again, we talked about the volatility that compensatory picks that the Bengals received in third and fourth rounds,
mm-hmm.
that those rounds, they're locked in, they know where they are, so they can maybe move three and whether or not one of these receivers that they really like are still there. Well, maybe in the late 30s, we can get them at 40. Well, now because of those compensatory picks,
hear you, and it would make sense to a lot of people.
Well, put it this way. Maybe someone, he has to listen.
Yeah, I think he's far more willing to listen now, and you never know. I think he'll be really willing just to sit there. To me, the best chance of a guy like that happening at 30 or something like that, and added a third after doing, he does make sense at 30 there or something like that. One of these more high-end receivers or a Dorsett. I don't know that he has as much production as you'd like to have seen. He was a home run, but that speed you can't teach. We talked about high floor heights when you're running 4.25s,
right.
and you're averaging 25 yards of reception or whatever. But there's guys like 53. There's just so many.
Right.
I think you just sit and just see which one falls to you. It's probably close between safety and tight end. These are Collins happening at 21. I just don't. I think they would think about it if he was there. I mean, I think, our starting nickel defense is all up, okay, after this year, and look for some safety products. That it's just like they've been, had a lot of success finding safeties fifth round. They, it seems like they always need a safety, but they've to it for the right guy at the right place. But I don't see that happening here because there's not three landing guys. It feels like a day three selection to me, unless you find that they think they can develop, gives them a year behind Reggie and George and Sean Williams, who the special teams.
You know? Right. Yeah, it's again, it's the advantage of previous drafts.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you have to be aware of contract situations. Not everyone will return, but some of them will. You know, I know that you've written about this off season where players want to continue their careers in Cincinnati. Maybe they come back after they've left. So it's a little different era in that regard. So you're right. I think they, you know, third round, fourth round, you know, it's a spot to fill those positions. Obviously, I think heading into camp, Bengals fans' favorite question is Tyler Eifert healthy?
Yes.
Again, I think they'll, until proven otherwise, they'll assume he is.
Yeah.
And assume he will be the guy they picked at 21.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, a guy who
a
fell.
A game changer.
Yeah.
Potential.
A guy who they were probably surprised was still there.
Hey, he had three receptions for 31 yards on 8 snaps last year. That projects really well.
Okay. Right, so
it could be the greatest season in the history of receiving.
Right, had Bengals fans fall out of their chair that I mentioned him being healthy.
Right.
But it's that type of thing, though. So I you're right. I, you know, after landing in college, things about drafting safety so early is wow, you really have to be a special guy
mm-hmm.
to be a safety picked in the first round or very high in the first round. I mean, you can, especially later, you can find those guys. And George Aloka is a great example, I think, you know, where, you know, he told you he's watching guys go before him in 2012, wondering, hey, I'm better than this guy, I'm better than this guy. And sometimes you can find some of those smaller schools. Boise State's not, he'll probably take offense, I'll call a smaller school, but
yeah.
it's, you know, it's not that power, I guess. And you can find, at least to me, you can find a guy, as you said, Paul, that can maybe sit, watch, learn. Special teams is very important, and develop a little bit. Again, it's that luxury of having hit on previous drafts.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. I'm glad you mentioned George. I want to bring him in real quick. He's not afraid to say anything, and he was really interesting.
Are you one of those guys that was motivated by slipping? Because I remember talking to Marvin Jones, who went, you guys went right next to each other, and he said, I know 23 receivers. I know who went in front of me.
I don't know the exact numbers. I just know it ain't too many. You know, to me, the only one personally that, during the whole draft process, I was like, okay, was Harrison Smith. He's been playing well, and he's done a good job for the Vikings. Yeah. Every other safety, I don't remember them. I don't know what they're doing now.
Yeah.
They either got cut or traded. So, I mean, it's a marathon, not a race. But it definitely motivated me. But, you know, it is what it is. You got to earn your chips once you get to the team that you're on. You know, I know first rounders, you know, that got traded or cut. And then I know guys who are, you know, undrafted, so to say, and played right away. Look at Montez. So,
yeah.
I mean, the draft definitely motivates somebody, motivates people, and it did for me a little bit.
What was that? What were those days like? Were you just pissed off as you kept going down, or were you kind of just trying not to? Did you walk away?
No. So like, as a competitor, you always say, you know, as a competitor, I always think you got to think of the best. Right?
Yeah.
You know, you're not just saying anybody better than you, and you honestly feel you're the best. But there's some guys you perceive like, okay, I don't think he's better than me, but I can see why he got drafted ahead of me.
Right.
Okay. So those are the first, you know, second round guys. Some of them. But as a third round hit, I'm seeing guys, I'm like, man, I know I'm better than him. I played him in college. This and that. And guys you probably never even heard of go before you. And that's when it starts to sting. Like, damn.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what it was for me. In the fourth, fifth, and the third, fourth, and fifth round.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it just is like a little, okay. Yeah, you're not as, you know, kind of humbling.
Yeah.
Definitely humbling. And it was even more humbling once I got here. The draft was, you know, draft is what it is. You get drafted, at least you got a shot. But
yeah.
It was more humbling when I got here. And that first year was humbling. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, it turned out okay.
As a player, and I feel like, and I don't know how much of it I get is BS. I remember last year or 2 years ago. I can't remember exactly which year, but it was Ray Maluga talked about this, about how he'd never watched the draft so closely as when he knew he was entering the last year of his contract, and he was wondering if they were basically going to draft his replacement in the first round. He said, I had never watched it like that before, where I was nervous, you know. And Ray's kind of an introspective, nervous, self-examining type anyway. Anybody that's been following this team is well aware of the Ray Maluga psyche conversation. But, you know, it's as a player, and I don't know, I've not been a player since junior high when I did have 11 rushes for 57 yards against Little Flower. Not to boast my stats, but I don't know what it's like to sit there and watch and see them draft your position and what that must do to you. Guys claim to me all the time they don't care. I refuse to buy that. Yeah, I refuse to buy that.
No, what's funny is it's the thing you have to say because you are a teammate. There are exceptions, but you rarely don't want to be the guy who's in the corner with 30 people around you screaming about the money you want. It happens, but
right.
for the most part, most guys don't want to be that guy. And just having, again, watched this last year up close with Randall Cobb in Green Bay. Here's a guy who all last year and all off season heading into last season was saying, no, it's not going to bother me. It's all business. Someone else takes care of that. I'm not worried about it. Well, then after 4 or 5 weeks, he finally admitted. He's like, I am thinking about it. And I did try too hard. And it's the reason I didn't play well. And after he sort of came out, and I don't know if he needed to say it publicly to sort of get over that.
Yeah.
But once he did, all of a sudden, Randall Cobb's catching touchdowns again.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the year, Randall Cobb got paid. Similar situation up there with Greg Jennings. Again, a free agent, said it didn't bother him. And then as soon as he signs his contract in Minnesota, it bothered me. I thought,
right.
So, it's one of those things where, I give them all the credit in the world. They really, truly don't think about it. But it's football, Paul. And
it's not just it's all football. About, yeah, it's your family.
Right.
It's your life. You get in this league, you get one contract that you can if you're lucky. And everybody knows that.
Right.
And for a lot of guys, when your one is coming up and everybody thinks about how they're paid compared to everybody else, don't believe the hype. Everybody knows the list and where they rank. And it can affect guys. Absolutely. Let's do this. I have another. I loved this conversation that I had last week, and so I want to kind of go back and revisit last year's draft. And this is a topic that we sort of talked about: luxury picks and taking guys that you don't necessarily need right now because they are the best player available. A prime example of that is Darqueze Dennard last year, who they had. Everything fell perfectly for him. They had to take Darqueze Dennard. He was at a position that in the future they could use. Guys were getting older. But he came in and he was the fifth corner last year. I mean, how many teams draft spend a first round pick on a corner who is the fifth guy in that room? Okay. I can answer that for you. It's one. Okay. No, I mean, right. it's a philosophy of you have to have first round corners. You have to always be thinking about that. Well, Darqueze Dennard is a very good interview as well. He was great with us last year. I loved him on Beyond the Stripes. We had a lot of fun. He was very humble. He was very – I understand that I am in a room with four other first-round picks, including three of them who have, you know, 10 plus years in this league. And I'm here to learn. I want to learn. I want to be a team player. If I'm going to play on special teams, I want to dominate special teams. That's what I just want to do whatever I can do to help the team win. We talked to Darqueze Dennard a couple of days ago, and that was not the same tone. It was blood in the water, and I want to play. I am ready to play, and I'm ready to come in and steal a job. When Terrence Newman left, I knew that the position was open. And Paul Gunther, I remember talking to Paul Gunther a couple times. Right after the end of the season, and in Indianapolis, we had a real long conversation about this, about the cornerback room is wide open. There's no 1, 2, 3, 4 pre-ranking. After last year, it's all wide open. Drake or Patrick could be a starter. Adam Jones could be the number one. Leon Hall may be the four. I mean, and you know, throw in whatever ends up happening with this draft, Brandon G, those types of guys. It's a competition, and nobody is misunderstanding that. It doesn't matter how many snaps you've taken in this league, whoever they view to be the best corners, whether you're Darqueze Dennard or you're Adam Jones, you're going to be the starter. And I think he knows that. He's been told that, and he's ready to seize the opportunity. He just sounded like a different guy. And I think it's something that Bengals fans should be excited about. And this is the kind of thing you can get when you draft like that, where it's 1 year later, you almost add another first-round pick. They feel like they added another first-round pick in Will Clark because they had him put 20 pounds on this offseason, and now he looks like the real defensive end that they wanted him to be the whole time. They feel like they're adding a bunch of first-round picks because they've been able to draft luxury-wise the last few years. They may be adding another first-round pick in Marcus Hunt if he takes the step that he's supposed to take. But I want to bring in Darqueze and how he sounded talking about the idea of how he views this next year's season.
Your focus this offseason is on the season. I mean, what do you want to get out of this year?
First and foremost, you know, I want to play. I want to reach for the stars. I want to say I want to be a Pro Bowl player. I want to be an All-Pro player. But before anything, I got to, you know, touch the field. So I can't make those allegations and, you know, pretty much, you know, set myself that high. But I want to, you know, contribute as a starter, become a starter. And, you know, whatever else happens, you know, it's a blessing. You know, it's as long as I get on the field and be able to make plays, you know, that'll be a dream come true. And then further on that, you know, hopefully in the future, Pro Bowl and All-Pro season here.
What has to happen to get you on the field this year, do you feel?
I think what's had to happen is just me having a good spring and, you know, have a good fall as well. Just to show the, you know, the coaches and, you know, that I'm the player they drafted. Also that I'm consistent and I can go play with any receiver, no matter how big, how fast, how small, how quick, that I'm all around corner, I can come up with tackles. Basically all the things I showed at Michigan State, I got to show that I'm the same type player and I can be even better. So this offseason, especially this spring, especially, I think this is going to be big. It's a big spring for me. And this is regarding competing in OTAs and especially in minicamp, and, you know, show the coaches and open up some eyes and let them know that I'm the real.
I know you learned a lot from Terrence, and you know, obviously you hate that he has to move on, but did you almost see that as, okay, here's an opening?
Yeah, you know, it's definitely hard to see him going, you know. I keep looking over there where his locker room was. You know, I talked to him and basically, you know, congratulated me and basically, you know, pumped my spirits up and just told me all the things he told me this past season. Just keep your spirits high, be the great player you was at college, and, you know, just have fun. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. And, you know, just seeing him go, it was definitely a loss, but, you know, obviously, spot opening. And, you know, with me, I'm kind of like that. Right now, I see blood in the water. I'm a shark. So I got to just, you know, do by all means necessary. I got to go get it.
Do you expect to start?
That's my expectations.
I'm sorry?
That's definitely my expectations. You know, this off season, especially after the season, there was a plan. You know, right after the season, I started training. You know, I want it. I'm very hungry for it. I'm hungry for the spot. And, you know, we'll see how it goes.
You were pretty humble last year, coming just trying to play your role, whatever they asked you to do. The second year, do you feel more confident to say things like, I want to start, I'm here to start and take a job and things like that because you are in your second year and you went through it once?
I think I'm still that humble player. I'm still that humble person, but at the same time, you know, you can't just – me coming in last year, me being the first-round draft pick, you know, any other – you know, first rounder, pretty much expected to play. But, you know, you look around in the NFL locker room, you won't see another cornerback locker room like this. You have five first-round draft picks. So, you know, I got to be realistic as well. You know, me just coming out of college, and these guys have all 3 years playing in the NFL at the highest stage. So, me coming in last year, I could have said, oh, I could be this big starter, and, you know, that wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, we got a lot of veteran guys, and, you know, they all play at a high caliber. You know, they're always all pro bowl. They've been there, they've done that. So
yeah.
It's kind of hard for me to come in and say that. But for now, I think just me having the confidence as well, me having a year under my season to actually, you know, playing the game, to basically experience the game, like atmosphere, the speed of the game, to be able, you know, to learn from those guys as well, to take their habits and with their studying habits and their training habits and the way they taking care of themselves throughout the offseason and during the season, and just seeing those things, I think they all contribute to me right now. So I think that's why I have, you know, that mindset. Last year I still had that same mindset, but, you know, I had to be realistic about the situation. You know, spot is opening, so, you know, it's pretty much, you know, it's a spot opening. So
it's there to be taken.
It's there to be taken.
So that's Darquez, and I found the conversation really interesting, enlightening, and if you're a Bengals fan or a Bengals coach, you can't be happier about that attitude.
No, that's exactly what you want, because, well, it goes back to your point earlier and what we talked about. The philosophy of best player available is, and what you said with Duke Tobin, we don't draft backups. look, if you've got a guy who's willing to be passive the entire time, then you picked the wrong guy.
Right.
Like there is that line to walk with being humble and learning and knowing your role, because that's just as important to chemistry and team success as being the guy and performing in that. But hey, look, yeah, Terrence Newman left, so there's a spot.
Yeah.
And that's all, again, that's all the coaches and all players ever ask for, is the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then if you see it, you want the guys on your roster to go after it.
Yeah. But will, how much, and this is a question that I asked last year a number of times, how much is that lip service that there's an opportunity, and how much is there really an opportunity for some of these guys? Because we saw it last year with the defensive line rotation, and now there were a number of guys that weren't producing and didn't deserve it, and there was a lot of situations, Geno Atkins, you know, underperformance, a lot of things there. But that defensive line rotation disappeared at some point in the season. Now, a lot of it had to do with Marcus Hunt's injury. But we just didn't quite see the rotation that you're used to when Mike Zimmer was here, would go eight deep and give guys a chance. And that's how you let them develop. The Fisher-Price group that we talk so much about with Carlos Dunlap, Michael Johnson, and Geno Atkins that came in just on third down packages rushing the passers when they were basically rookies – that became the centerpiece of this team's defense, was happened because they gave him a chance. They really gave him an opportunity. They gave him a role. I didn't see that last year. And so the question is, and whether that's they just didn't, he didn't feel comfortable with him, but, you know, everybody admitted after the season then, well, Skillbear was gassed. He played too many snaps, couldn't play too many. Well, where does that fall? You know, at some point, you've got to give guys a chance to just go prove that they can do it and not just say that you're going to give them a chance to go prove that they can do
well,
it.
Well, I guess I'll play devil's advocate a little bit. And
please.
In the sense that the part about, you know, drafting for luxury and maybe getting what you feel is a steal at whatever point. I mean, Devin Still, for instance, he's a second-round pick. Well, look at where he's at now in terms of his contract situation, how this team feels about him. Not everyone's going to hit. And what I mean by that is these coaches see it every day in practice, and depending on the philosophy, you have to earn it on the practice field first before you get to do it on Sundays. And maybe that's why, going back to the draft this year at 21, maybe there is a defensive tackle or defensive end that they mm-hmm. select, because they weren't seeing, you know, we may wonder, well, why weren't we seeing these other young guys? We weren't seeing this rotation. Well, maybe during, you know, Monday through Friday, Tuesday through Saturday, those guys weren't showing what they needed. I don't know that just yet, but it's one of those things where
how many guys out there are under the lights guys? You know, it's
right.
where they're okay during practice, but whatever it is, Sunday, the helmet comes on and the pads come on and they kill it. And I just feel like you see that at a certain point, you have to give a guy a chance to prove that he can be that type. But even if you – it's the NFL and you either do it in practice, is just important. You know, you got to prove yourself, practice to play. I hear you. But you got to feel like you gave a guy a fair
shake. And I'm not saying they're not going to. I just feel like that's a storyline to keep an eye on, is how much opportunity is really given to some of these young guys. Or is maybe Paul Gunther maybe a guy who is more of a trusting of his veterans type of coordinator? We're still learning about him. You know, it's his first year last year as a coordinator. I think that's going to help him. I view him as he's going to improve. He saw what was wrong. The defensive line wasn't deep enough, and they went out and got a bunch of guys in free agency. Kudos. We'll see what happens as far as maybe not being afraid to rely on some younger guys and maybe just give them a little bit more of a role. And in his defense, he's talked to us openly about that, about how he wants to do more of that, and he feels like he needed to do more of that, give guys more of a chance, and we'll – you know, particularly in the preseason.
Right.
You know, when it doesn't mean as much, but give guys way bigger roles to really learn about the backups in the preseason more than trying to build the first team chemistry.
Right. And I think at least when it comes to the cornerback spot, you know, there's some tape there. There's some Sunday game film there, I guess. You know, going back to Darquez where he, you know, he probably feels ready, and again, as you said, that there's that ego there also of being on that island and being wanting to be that guy.
Yeah.
And he fell. Obviously, as you said, the Bengals had him as a top 10 pick on their
board. For them, yeah.
Yeah, for them. So I think in that sense, there probably will be an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas – you know, if you're going to look at other positions around the team where that stock wasn't that high, that guy wasn't as highly thought of, well, maybe there's always a pecking order. There's always a difference.
Yes.
You know, guy A can do certain things and get away with it because he's guy A.
Yeah.
So if you want to get on the field, if you're guy B and C, you might have to do a few other things. So I think at least when it comes to that corner spot, I think you'll see some of that. But maybe not elsewhere.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, it's all going to change after this weekend,
right?
Because there's going to be some guys who were kicking back, and you know, maybe they went bowling. They come back from bowling like, wait, you drafted three guys in my position? What the hell is going on? So there will be those guys, and we'll talk to them the Monday after the draft, and you'll see it in their eyes. They'll realize that someone just lit a fire under them. There's going to be a lot of fires lit because there's 9 picks. There's 6 in the top 4 rounds. Guess what doesn't have to guys pick in the top 4 rounds? They don't get cut.
Right.
They make the team. They make the team more than likely for at least the first 2 years, probably longer than that, unless barring injury. And those spots have to come from somewhere. And on a team that currently has their 53 pretty robust, there's going to be a lot of fires lit. I can't wait for it to happen because that means draft prep is over.
Right.
The lead up to the draft is just exhausting. How much time can we spend writing about something that is insanely unpredictable? The whole thing is nothing but high stakes, educated guessing by everyone involved, and everybody that really knows is trying to make sure we don't know.
Right.
Okay, and feeding us other stuff. I mean, smoke screens about smoke screens. I can't do it any longer. There's lots of great storylines that will come out of what actually happens this weekend. But, you know, we can only kind of guesstimate where it ends up. I think we've got a good feel for what the Bengals want to do. But how the draft falls and what you want to do often changes. We'll have everything, of course. We're going to have I'll run down some of the stuff we're going to do. Of course, we're going to have all your look-aheads this week. We'll look at draft needs. We'll take a closer look at specifically round one. We'll, each day, round two and three, we'll take a look. We'll advance those. We'll have all kinds of stuff. We'll be embedded down at the stadium. There's this idea that we would go to Chicago. People ask me all the time. We're not going to Chicago. That everybody is here. The Bengals coaches, all the Bengals coaches are here. They fly the players, the top picks in here. So we'll have one-on-one interviews with them. We'll talk to every coach after every pick. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. We'll be posting up all the videos, all the interviews, so you know everything you know about every pick the second that they're picked. We're going to get all the information up to you so you understand the ramifications of everything. Of course, all up on Cincinnati.com and on our Bengals page this weekend. We're basically going to have like a studio set up down there, so we're going to be doing reactions to everything. We're really looking forward to it. And we'll do a post-podcast that you'll have up for you next Monday morning, kind of recapping the whole week, who it affected, lots of audio from who we talked to and listening to coaches talk about certain players. So we'll have all that for you from this point forward. I'm looking forward to it. We see now we can just call each other and say, hey, let's meet up at 312 Elm and let's do a podcast, and we can keep it consistent. You know, I like right. to once every in the off season, once every 2 weeks, once a week until I take my long vacation. You know, I'm getting married, so I'm just disappearing off the face of the earth, and I'm going to hand the keys to you for a couple of weeks. But outside of that, we want to keep these as regular as possible for you guys, because I know you're thirsty. They are thirsty for knowledge. They want it, and we love bringing it to you. So keep an eye out for all that. And Jim, it's great to have you on, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. Looking forward to it. It's I want Bengals fans to get at me.
They,
and I understand what I'm asking for.
Yes,
but
they will get at you.
Yes.
And I've directed all Tyler Eifert questions, Jay Osarski, on Twitter. Make sure you check it out there. All right, so we got to go out with a little music, as we always do. And, you know, I was thinking about this. And I said, you know what? It's kind of like it's a fresh look for us now. You know, we got a good tag team here. It's just a fresh look for our Bengals coverage. And I got to go Outkast. So fresh and so clean. It feels like we're fresh and clean now. So we're going to go out with a little bit of Outkast to take it out, because I think that's just going to be our flavor. It just feels about right to me. So anyway, we'll have to take out. Great to have you on, Jim. And of course, we'll make sure you check out all of our coverage for Cincinnati.com, and we'll have a podcast back for you recapping the whole draft next week. Outkast, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you later. Ain't nobody don't mess me. I'm just so fresh and so clean.
Belton, Patty Melton, Monte Carlos, and El Dorado. I'm waking up out of my slumber, feeling like Rallo. So follow, it's showtime at the Apollo, minus the Kiki Shepherds. With about a for Trent, Teddy, Pendergrass, cooler than Freddie Jackson, sipping a milkshake in a snowstorm. That I throw warm in the dorm room at the AU. We pay two athletes, might cake you, but you must have me mistaken with them statements.